there, it's Tracy Tully, and you're listening to Tracy Tully Talks at bbsradio.com, the place to be right now, streaming live with another 60 minutes of thought-provoking topics, sharing with you conversations that are relevant today, tomorrow, and in the future. Join me each week on Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, 5 p.m. Wednesday PT, hello Los Angeles. If you missed the live show, jump onto your favorite podcasting platform and you'll find me on Tracy Tully Talks. We do have some adult language, so if you have some little ones around, pop on your earphones. Hello, Joe. It's Tracy Tully here, and I would love to introduce our very special guest today, Dr. Joe Lukens. And Dr. Joe has been on our Tracy Tully Talks radio show before, speaking in another area. But today, we are very fortunate because she has just launched her new book, and her new book is called In the Grandstands, Champion Your Teen Through the Tears and Triumph of Sport. I love this book, and I love the fact that it's been written now. It's very pertinent because with our lifetime in schools and watching the chaos that surrounds parents and sporting events and how that needn't be necessary. So Jo has helped countless athletes from perform their best, from juniors to the elite athletes. Joe, tell me about your author journey, if you can, please.
Thank you, Tracy, and thank you very much for having me along to talk with you and to your audience. So my authoring journey started some time ago. I actually first intended to write a book many, many years ago, but you're familiar with my process, Tracy, and I found a system that was going to work for me to help me to share my messages. What I found with my background in sports psychology is there were very similar questions being asked year in, year out by different parents, different groups. And so the first book that I wrote, as you made mention to, is called The Elite. And that was really about the lessons that I've learned from working with elite performers and what anyone can take from that. So I guess the key message from that book is that you don't have to be an elite performer to think like one. So that aims to share some of the tips and tricks around elite performance. My new baby, my new book, In the Grandstands, as you said, it's very fresh out. So I think you're one of the very first people that I've spoken to about it, Tracy. So I'm delighted that that's the case. Came about because I've worked, as you said, for many years across all platforms of sport. So from young, keen, enthusiastic kids starting out through to those athletes who are on the world stage. And what I find is that parents have many questions around how do I best support my child. You know, my child's in this predicament, I'm not sure what to do. You know, all these kinds of things that can come up for parents in sport. And I think it's my experience that by the large, I think the majority of parents have absolutely the best intentions for their children, but that doesn't mean they always have the answers or that perhaps they're second guessing themselves about what to do next. And then of course sometimes we know parents don't always get it right. I'm a parent, you're a parent, we all know we don't always get it right, and I did aim to share a little bit of that in the book. I'm just as human as any other parent, have made plenty of my own mistakes, but what I wanted to do was share based on what we know from the research, what I've found from my clinical experience, and then I guess just what I know also as being a parent, what are some of the tips and tricks that parents can think about when they're supporting their children through the sporting journey?
Oh, that's great. And for our listeners, Joe and I had breakfast this morning at 7 a.m. in Townsville, and she gave me her book. I jumped on a plane. I've just got off the plane and set myself up, and I read the book, your book, in the plane, and I found myself laughing a lot because I could see the similarities, I could see the mistakes I'd made, I could hear my own kids' answers, etc. And it really was a fabulous book to read. I could see people peering over the aisle, the guy on the other side, the lady next to me, to have a look at what I was doing, and it was great. And you have a very special foreword written by a three-time Olympian. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, so I feel quite blessed that, so as you mentioned, I'm based in sunny North Queensland, specifically in Townsville. And in my time here, I spent 6 or 7 years working with one of our national teams, so the Townsville Fire, who are part of the Women's National Basketball League. And for the last few years of her career, Susie Bakovic was our captain and, you know, MVP. She's got amazing credentials as an athlete in terms that, as you said, she's attended three Olympics, she's won a bronze, she's won a silver, she's missed out on going to an Olympics, so she knows what that pain is like. She's played overseas, and she and I, you know, obviously know each other through that connection with the Fire, and I was particularly interested to get her perspective and so grateful to receive it about her sporting journey, because of course she was a young athlete who started out in the backyard with her brother, because she has an older brother, and he used to kind of knock her around in the backyard as they used to play basketball together as young kids, and then eventually she was doing a little bit better than him, and so and then she was dunking over the top of him. And so part of what she did in the forward and part of what she did in our discussions leading into her writing the forward for the book was she talked about the relationship with her parents. You know, so for her, who really is at the pinnacle of her sport in terms of achievement. So in the female basketball circles, there's not too many that would stand above her. You know, so it's really interesting to see her perspective. And what she, one of the stories I remember that she shared, and she talked about it in the foreword, is that if you'd gone to one of her junior games and if you'd watched her play, up in the grandstands there would have been a mum up there who cheered constantly through the game. She said it was one of those loud mums, and a mum was constantly cheering. But if you'd actually been there to watch the game, you wouldn't have actually known which team this mum was supporting, because she celebrated every child out on the court. So if the opposition made a great, you know, shot, then she'd cheer them on. If there was a tough foul by her daughter's team on the other team, she'd sort of react on behalf of the other team. So she talks about this very positive, supportive environment by her parents. And she said one of the things that she most valued was that if ever she missed a shot, which of course in basketball you do, if ever she missed a shot, her mother would just say, well, let it go, because you've got to shoot another one and you've got to shoot another one. And Susie made the comment to me that she thinks part of the reason she was never scared to take a shot in her career and she took as many shots as she did was because her mother just really helped her to understand that it doesn't matter, just move on. And then as the story moves on for Susie, she's now retired from her time playing, and she's the mother of twin daughters. So her daughters are about 14 months old, so they're at that fabulous stage that 14-month-olds are, where you get them into the shopping centre and one runs left and the other one runs right, and Susie's left running all over the shopping centre. But we got to speak about her hopes and aspirations for her daughters growing up, and particularly what she hopes for them in terms of the sporting experience. So she talks about that in the book, which is great.
Very, very blessed, and I loved the way that she talked about now I take my seat in the grandstands, which is what I'm doing now, obviously, and I love that. I love that tag. So tell me, Jo, why is it so important that parents play a supportive role in the journey of a young athlete?
It's incredibly important, Tracy, and it's such a great question, because we know that sport offers all the life lessons in 45 minutes, you know, or however long the sport is, or if you're a swimmer, it's offered to you in a minute, whatever it is. And so through our sporting journey, we learn to set goals, we learn to achieve, we learn to get ready for performance, we learn to deal with disappointment, we're exposed to so many things through sport where we can draw on those lessons as we travel through life. And one of the things we know, particularly from the literature in positive psychology, is when the challenges come along, we need a soft place to land. We need, you know, that we thrive when we're in an environment where when when something doesn't go the way we want it to, we've got a place where we can dust ourselves off, rethink how we're experiencing whatever it is, and we can move on. And parents fulfill so many roles in the lives of our children. We chaperone them, we feed them, we clothe them, we, you know, so many things. We help educate them. There's all these things that we do. And supporting our children through the sporting journey is really important. And I guess being mindful about where we help and assist and where the boundaries need to be, I think, is a really important part of it. And I, you know, the way you phrased that question about why is it parental support that's so important? Because our parents are the role models. They, you know, they dictate, you know, how we react to situations. And parents really set the tone around expectations for children. And I think that, you know, parents really need to be mindful of just how influential they are, particularly in the lives and shaping young children.
Absolutely. And, you know, while I was reading the book, I was reflecting on my own journey as a young athlete and in sport. And we lived a very, very long way from home. We caught a train and then a bus to school each day and return. I still managed to swim 2 miles every day, regardless of the season. And I loved all my sports, you know, high jump, running, et cetera, et cetera. But what I did notice in your book was the distinct difference between when we grew up and how our parents supported us in comparison to what is happening now. Can you share some of your insight there with our listeners?
Yes. So the world has changed, I think, and I would agree with you that for many of us it might be get on your bike and head down to footy or netball or whatever it was, or mum and dad might drop you off. Or my parents always attended because we often had to drive a fair way. But the level of participation by parents is different now to what it was. And I think we have communities and families who, and this doesn't speak for everyone, but speaks for many, but there are many who are better resourced. So children have more opportunities. There are more opportunities. There's more sports and things. The other thing that we've seen is a change in the seasons of sport. So, you know, I've got a child who's a basketballer. Basketball never ends. It's a never-ending sport. There's a summer season. There's a warehouse season. There's a winter season. And children, you know, whereas it used to be quite distinct, you know, you kind of had your footy seasons and your netball seasons, and then you had your swimming and your cricket and your life-saving kind of seasons. Yeah. But now we see the seasons blend and roll into it from one to the next. Our children are very heavily scheduled in terms of activities, and some would say over-scheduled in terms of every afternoon. It's not even that they've got something on, but they've probably got two or three things on, which is amazing in terms of opportunities. But we can fatigue children, and we can also take them away from those opportunities to just play in the backyard and climb a tree, you know. So I don't think kids do that as much anymore, that there's lots of classes. And again, every family, every child needs to find the balance that's going to work for them, which can be sometimes you don't find the balance until you become unbalanced. But, you know, finding what's going to work best within a household. Because even if you have, let's say you've got two or three children, then they say, right, but we're all going to play soccer. You can guarantee they're all going to be in different age groups, training on different days, going to different practices, potentially if you're travelling to venues, you know. So it's a big load on families as well. So we really do need to have some things in place to help guide people around those sorts of decision-making about what our children are doing.
It is interesting that what you're speaking about there. So I know for us, when we grew up, We were outside all the time, so there was no electronic gadgets, so to speak. And we worked on a farm, and we were very fit. There's nothing for us to walk 2 miles to the train station if mum couldn't take us there. It was just done. I don't know about how many kids would do that in current age now. The other thing, as you said, is it's a faster world. We had a slower world, and the difference, I think, is quite interesting. Our son went to America for a period of time when he was in grade 10, and he went there solely to play basketball. That was all he wanted to do. And when he arrived, he got the gridiron season. He was just devastated, absolutely devastated. But he started playing gridiron and loved it, absolutely adored it, and then eventually did the basketball. But what he noticed was the camaraderie of all the families. So in the school, all the females, or who identified as females, and their families went to all the male sports and cheered. And likewise, the males went to all the females. And so there's this huge whole of school support. And it really was different, he said. And not just for sports, he said, for music, you know, for a lot of the different what they called extracurricular activities. So it was very, very interesting that that your book has come out, and I hope it starts a huge movement in terms of how parents and how children view sport in their lives and the benefits, the huge benefits of sport. I love statistics, and I love the statistics in your book. So you have recent studies across 30 different sporting areas concluded that 70% of teens leave competition by the age of 13. Now, as an educator of 38 years, that is exactly what I saw all the time. Can you share why you think that is?
I think there's a number of reasons, Tracy, as to why that might be the case. But typically the number one reason that children will, or teenagers particularly, because you're right, it's that 13-year age gap, age group, it's not fun. It's, you know, like I know at that age children are getting jobs and maybe finding, you know, partners and doing all sorts of things, but they actually say, because what you often find within sport is that it's around that age 12, 13 where sport becomes competitive at the pointy end. So you get to the end of a season and the finals count, whereas for a lot of the junior athletes, you know, they might go through a final series but everyone gets a little ribbon at the end or whatever it is, and it doesn't actually count for anything. But it starts to streamline, it starts to specialise, those rep sports start to come into it, yeah, and lots of pressure comes with it. So if you're a high-performing athlete at that time, perfect. You know, it can suit you really, really well. If you're someone else who's coming through and all of a sudden you're not getting picked in the teams, you're not winning, and winning becomes the emphasis, you know, whatever it is that detracts from that in terms of fun. And I talk about one particular study within the book about, even, you know, we hear that comment often, you know, kids say, oh, I don't do it because it's not fun. What's interesting is what happens when you actually ask kids, what does that actually look like? Like, what does it mean to say that something isn't fun? And when you look at that, kids actually have 15 different versions of what fun is, you know, and often it's about, you know, some things like being well coached. Being well coached is fun, you know. So there's lots of things like that that, and I have a whole chapter on the importance of fun within the book, because it's so fundamental and it sounds so obvious. But I mean, Susie, when I asked her, you know, what do you hope for Charlie and Layla in their years growing up? She said, I want them to be active. I want them to develop some skills from sport, and I want them to do it in an enjoyable place where they're having fun. So, you know, she's a three-time Olympian, and she didn't say, I want my kids to go to the Olympics. I mean, I'm sure she'd be delighted if they did, but she doesn't, you know, she doesn't care if they play basketball or what they do. She wants them to find a sport they love. And like you said, Tracy, you know, you and I caught up this morning. We talked about physical activity for ourselves. Yeah. Now, we're not teenagers anymore, but develop a lifelong love of sport and physical activity, and it will continue with us through our lives. And interestingly, I didn't actually talk about it in the book, but I talk about it in my lectures at university, that particularly for females who drop out of sport around about the age of 13, 14, typically won't pick it up again, if at all, until about 25. So there's this gap of inactivity, which of course we know, you know, physical activity serves so many purposes. It's a coping strategy. It's a resilience mechanism, as well as all the health benefits that we get from it and the social connection as well. So, you know, it's a real loss for us when when children and teens drop out of sport. So, you know, we need to be clever about how we promote that and encourage our kids to be involved.
I love it. And I noticed as I read through your book that this book is not just aimed at parents. There's quite a diverse group that will get a lot of information and goodness from this book. So can you tell our listeners, who is this book for?
Thank you. Thank you. And it's funny, isn't it? I mean, Tracy, you and I both learnt when we were on our first book writing journey that you really think about your audience and who it is. And then sometimes it almost catches you by surprise when you find out other people who are really interested in your messaging. So I had a sports administrator read it just recently, because it hasn't been out for very long. Read it just recently, and he said, "Joe, this isn't just a parent's book. This is, coaches should be reading this." Yeah. And I said, "Oh, great. Well, get some coaches to read it then." You know, and so there's a range. Anyone who's involved, particularly, I guess, in this case with children, could draw things out of it. And you could. You need to, you know, kind of connect the dots yourself a little bit. But if you had a teenager who was heavily involved in the arts or music, you know, many of the principles that I talk about, you know, apply just as easily in that setting. And it's been suggested to me that I could write a book for because my children have both been heavily involved in the performing arts as well as in physical activity. So, you know, a lot of those messages are really important about supporting kids. And I think when you look at some of the chapters, like one of the chapters that's challenging for people, and I really hope people read it, is the chapter about parents. You know, the benefits of, you know, gazing into the mirror and thinking about how you and your sporting journey has influenced and continues to influence your own children. Hopefully people feel supported while they read that, but see the value in reading that particular chapter.
I loved it, absolutely loved it. And I had to have a laugh because you bared your soul, and we all know that nobody is perfect. There's no such thing. There's absolutely no such thing as perfectionism, and we're quite able to share those nuggets of where we tripped over. And when you talked about the value of sport and how parents can fall into the trap of paying their child to succeed, and I did laugh at that area, because I was one of them. I came to a point where our son did everything too easily. He excelled at every single thing he did, and I felt that he felt that everything was just too easy, and at a point that he'd jump in a swimming pool and smash it out to the end, and it was just the same old. And I was wondering if he was slipping in really trying and building up that drive in him, and then one day he was saving up for PS2 or something, I said, you know, I wonder if you can beat your own time today. And he just said, yeah, sure, Mum. And he didn't seem that interested. And I said, I'll give you $20 pocket money if you do. And I knew when I said it that was really naughty, but I wanted to see what he could do. I wanted to see how far he could stretch himself, and I knew that money was definitely something that
that's the point that I make in the book, isn't it? And before I make any comment on that, Tracy, I've got to know, how did he go?
He smashed it.
And that's the point that I make in the book about money, is that it's a motivator. There's no doubt. Like, for those of us that work, part of the reason most of us go to work is because we get paid to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if I said to most people, if you weren't going to get paid for doing what you do, would you still go? And most people say, well, I've got to put food on the table, Joe. But that aside, you know, there is no doubt that money is a motivator. Mm-hmm. The challenge for us is to think about what are the consequences of using that motivator. Now, you know, Tracy, as you said, you know, and I love your honesty around that, is you kind of go, oh, and I know that was naughty, because what you see is, you know, the consequences of that. Now, I think there's a difference between, you know, doing that as a one-off, and if you were doing that every week, it would be expensive for starters. You'd have an amazing swimmer. But what you'd also have, as you well know, is that the day that you decided this is too expensive, or, you know, for whatever reason, you stop that payment, what actually happens is the money becomes the reason for doing it, as opposed to the love of the sport or the challenge of getting the PB, or, and even I talk about PBs in the book as well, you know, like whatever it is, and it clouds our vision. And so what happens is it actually becomes a distractor for children. And I have this catchphrase that I use, which is don't pay to play. Because I just think that teaching our children that sport is a part-time job is pay them to mow the lawn if you want to, or, you know, and some parents would go, I'm not paying them to pay the lawn. They just need to do it. They live in the house as well. And, you know, I don't disagree with that sentiment either, but I just don't think we want to make sport a part-time job. And what we see is it has a significant effect on motivation for children, and it's generally not considered helpful. The literature doesn't support doing it as a strategy, because it shifts motivation. And there are differences between that happening in an individual sport like swimming than, say, in soccer. So I've seen lots of parents who do, you know, it's $5 a goal when you score a goal, and what you end up with is a selfish child who won't pass the ball.
Yeah.
You know, a child who brags to their mates about how they get paid. Yeah. You know, there's a whole range of things. And I was actually talking to a swim coach about this, like, last week. He's actually the swim coach I referred to in my personal story in the book. We were talking about personal bests. And we said it not too far away from where there were some young athletes who were actually there. And we were very careful with what we said.
Yeah.
I did say, though, you know, and obviously I have those concerns about kids who get paid for PBs. And these two children who weren't related both piped up and said, I get paid for PBs. And the other one went, I get paid for PBs. And one of them said, and if I get disqualified, I get a penalty. So I actually had to pay money. And I'm just... in my head, I said nothing in front of these children, nor would I. And it's not my place to go and lecture a parent. No. But if you're seeking my opinion, don't do it. You know, like, it's not often that I kind of get really strong on something and say yes or no. Like, I kind of go, you've got to make your own mind up. You've got to go see what works for you. But I'm going to tell you that it doesn't help your kids to pay them for their sport.
And the case you presented in that chapter was superb, and it rang true with me. And that is one chapter that I felt was a very special chapter for parents to read, because it does come back to the fun, doesn't it? And I think children are children. So we've got, you talk about children, young ones, then you talk about teens, and then obviously you talk about, you know, elite adult athletes as well. And the big thing is, to foster and grow their resilience, we've got to let them fail, and we've got to let them have that fun, and we've got to let them fall over and do all those sorts of things. You talked about the PB and working to goals, and you mentioned about a coach. And can you elaborate on that a little bit more about the personal best PBs?
Yeah, so the PB, and I have used that acronym a few times, so personal best, my apologies if people aren't familiar with that. So it's something very common in particularly in sports such as swimming and running, any throwing events, you know, anything where there's kind of measurement. So shooting, you know, I guess you could look at it too even in terms of shooting percentages if you're playing basketball. So there's lots of creative ways that you can get the notion, some sort of measurement within your sport that you are at your personal best. And that's a strong focus in a lot of sports. I did little athletics as a kid, and I can remember we used to have, McDonald's used to sponsor it. There used to be a chart, and each time you got your PB, you used to get your little stickers, and then, of course, you'd be rewarded with some sort of burger at the end of it all. And that's always been done with very good intention, and there is merit in it. And, you know, I'm a master's athlete now, and I want to run a PB and so forth. So it has its place, is what I would say. What we need to be careful of with teenagers particularly and young children is what a coach once referred to me as the curse of the PB. And it was a swim coach, not the swim coach that I mentioned in the book, it was a different swim coach who said, I wish I'd never heard of PBs. And I said, Why is that? Because I was thinking, you know, well, it's far better to be thinking about a PB than winning, you know, like having that as the main goal. And he said, but Joe, the problem is these kids. And so he was, and he has kids in squad from, say, the age of 8 through to 16. He said, when you're 8 years old and you have a carnival every 2 months, you're half an inch taller and, you know, 2 seconds faster just because you've grown. Mm. You know, there's a developmental influence that's there. So what happens is these beautiful kids get PBs every time they get in the pool. They take it for granted that, you know, over and over and over again they get them, which is great and reinforcing. But if we're not careful with our messaging, we the child then struggles when they hit, and, you know, it's going to depend on the child, 14, 15, 16, maybe it's a little bit older, but certainly if you're an Olympian, PBs are hard to come by, you know. So, you know, they don't come that often. If you are really getting to the pointy end of your sport, then it's really challenging to achieve that PB. So where it comes unstuck for some kids isn't necessarily at the Olympic level, because Olympic athletes can get their head around that and strive towards it, but it's in that middle group. It's when the PBs start to drop off and the child goes, oh, I'm not very good anymore. And that's where they get discouraged. So, I know, because I've had, my kids were both swimmers. We used to, you know, celebrate PBs. And they go, Mom, I remember one of them did I can't even remember what the event was, but it was like a 35-second PB. They hadn't done it for a year, you know, like. So I think we just need to kind of put some of that in context. And I just say to parents, just be mindful around that, because it becomes challenging and it can become problematic with adherence when they hit that age. Can I make one other point too, Tracy? And you made such a great point about rewarding children when they're younger and fun. The other observation I would make for those parents who are genuinely hopeful that their child might be, you know, one of the very, very, very few who make it through to the upper echelons, but some kids are going to do it because someone's got to get there. Is that every elite athlete that I've worked with, and I've been fortunate to work with many over the years, those who are fortunate enough to actually play out their career, so they get to the end and they retire of their own choosing, again, that is a tiny percentage, because most get injured or they get deselected and that's why their careers end. But for those that actually compete at the elite level and then eventually get to choose to leave, I've certainly met many athletes in that category who only stick it out because it's fun. Yeah. And even if they're getting paid a big bucket of money, and look, there's not many of these that I've seen in my career because there's not many that it happens to, but I've seen some athletes who will say to me, it's not fun anymore. I don't care what they pay me. I don't care what money they offer me. Now, that's hard for a lot of athletes to envisage, particularly many of our sports that don't get paid a lot or anything. Yeah. But I, whenever I've had unmotivated or elite athletes who are struggling, they're telling me it's not fun, you know. So that essence of fun, it's not just because it's a nice fluffy thing that we hope everyone will do. It's a foundation for success. Mm-hmm. And so finding the fun, and it doesn't matter what we're doing. So in this case, we're talking about sport, but this could be your business. It could be in your relationships. It could be in any part of the domains of your life. If you lose the fun element, then, you know, it becomes quite hollow.
Exactly. And that's the motivator. And also, as you said, it's the foundation of life. And I know both my husband and I, we highly valued team sports as well as solo sports. But we wanted our kids to do the team sports so that they would learn to share, that they would learn to be part of a group celebrating success or failure too. And that was really interesting. And coming to back to your book again, we talk about different types of parents, and I'm not going to skirt around this issue because I'm a parent, so I can. And we've been around the sporting world for a very, very long time, and of course we have a few labels, don't we, of parents? And we have the helicopter parent, the lawnmower parent, and the fighter pilot parent. And I once again, I started chuckling. I could see the people in the around me in the plane sort of looking over to see what I was laughing about. So none of them are flattering, absolutely, but they're there. They're out there. They're definitely out there. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Because it is part of life, isn't it?
It is indeed. It is indeed. So when we refer to the helicopter parent, you know, they are the ones, if you imagine they're up there in the helicopter hovering over us, you know.
Yeah.
I guess in a sense, someone was talking to me about it today, about my eldest is about to go for an interview for a university, and they said, we look out for those who have obviously been raised by helicopter parents, you know. So if not seen, you're right, it's not seen as a positive characteristic. And I think it's an interesting balance, Tracy, and, you know, your observations with all your years of experience in educating and working with children, because you said before, you know, we used to, you know, head off on our bikes as kids and off the plane, all the rest of it. And part of the reason children don't do that now is they might be located further away from things, but we worry more now as parents. And look, I can put my hand up for many times when I've been the helicopter parent. Mum, can I, ... No. Mm-hmm. And I've gone straight to, in my head, it's not safe, you can't do that, I can't protect you, you know. And I guess, unfortunately, we have enough real-life stories out there that kind of reinforce that behaviour for us. But your message before is the crucial element of it, is that failure isn't the opposite of success. Mm-hmm. It's part of success. Mm-hmm. And if we don't allow our children to lose, be disappointed, fail, you know, whatever it's going to be, they're never going to learn the strategies around it. I can remember one of my boys came into a soccer team, it was a new soccer team, and had come from a team where they had had it handed to them on a plate every week for a whole season. They'd lost every single game for a whole season. It was quite demoralising. Anyway, somehow he found his way into another team who had had the complete opposite season and, in fact, had been like that since they were the under sixes. So my son found his way into this team, a team of kids who only won. And they did a practice match. It was a practice match of soccer against some older kids, and they lost 2-1. And they came off the field at the end, and my son came off, looked at me and said, can I have an ice block? You know, and off he was ready to toddle off. The other child didn't come off. Yeah. Didn't come off because he was on the ground sobbing because it was the first time he'd ever lost. Mm-hmm. So, and it was interesting when I watched the response of the parent, because the parent went, I guess my reaction would have been, hop up, come on, you're all right, let's go, you know, or whatever I would have said. I don't know what I would have said. But the parent was like, oh, are you okay? And kind of bundled up in cotton wool.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'll be okay. And it's like, it is okay. They lost a scratch match, you know. And so I think the helicopter parenting, and I think it's, again, all we can do here is cast an eye back over ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing? How am I reacting? You know, how can disappointment, when it comes along, I mean, you don't need to throw it back in their faces straight away and go, gee, it's good you lost. But that kind of, okay, then, well, you know, kind of keep it in perspective, and then maybe a day or two later, you know, if it's been something like a grand final, you might say, you know, well, what have you learned about yourself? Or, you know, it's been like this year with the pandemic that we've been through. Our kids have missed out on a lot. I've got a grade 12er, missed out on a lot. World's missed out on a lot, really. You know, like, you know, welcome to the world, you know. So it's that kind of keeping that balance. So that's the helicopter parent. I get that was a very long answer, Tracy. Do you want me to talk about the lawnmower parent?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah, so the lawnmower parent. Well, the lawnmower parent, rather than being up above the child, is in front of the child. Mm-hmm. With the lawnmower going and they're pushing the way, because heaven forbid that a child would trip over something, walk through the long grass, you know, any of those sorts of things. So the lawnmower parent is the person who goes in front of their child, making it easy. And, again, it's very, I guess, similar messaging around the helicopter parent, is that if we don't allow our children to go through some of the discomforts, if, you know, if the coach comes in and says, you know, Tracy, you're on the bench today and you don't know why and you missed out and that doesn't seem fair because Billy over here probably should be on the bench and you're on the bench and you know, it's the, if you were to come back to the parent and say, well, that's not fair, Mum, I got put on the bench, how the parent then responds is incredibly important. Well, I'm going to go and talk to that coach and I'm going to sort that out. And no, back the coach, you know, like unless they're being really unreasonable, they're there for a reason. Even if it feels unfair, I've had my kids go through some of that stuff where sometimes they've gone, Mom, I just don't get it. And in my head, I thought, I don't get it either. And I just, where I can say, well, it's coach's call, mate. You know, it's not always going to make sense. It's not always going to be fair. Welcome to the world. You know, so, and look, and I'm not going to say that I've always done that easily, and I'm not going to say I've always done it either. You know, there has been times when I've gone back to talk to the coach, to talk to the teacher when, you know, maybe I could have rethought it. But I think that that's a good thing for all of us to think about and sometimes to, you know, stop, take a breath and think about what we're going to do.
Mm. And you've got the fighter pilot parent.
Yes. You can only imagine, can't you, what the fighter pilot parent does. It's a little bit like the other one I once heard was the Black Hawk Down parent. Yeah. You know, kind of comes in, creates carnage, scoops mm-hmm. up a child and takes off again. And I guess what the messaging around talking about all this, these styles of parenting, and it's not about that you like that all the time or, you know, that's some parents over there and we should judge them, but to recognise there are times when we don't get it right, that we're kind of, you know, and all we can do at that point is, I guess, learn ourselves a bit about ourselves and think about how we could do it differently, depending on what happened. Maybe there's someone you need to go and apologise to. Maybe you need to re-explain it to your child, you know, whatever it is. Because I think that's the other thing that I talk about in the book is our role as parents, as role models for our children. Mm. Be prepared where you can and where it's appropriate and, you know, developmentally appropriate and so forth to be a vulnerable human, you know. So if your child thinks that you just lived through sporting glory and you were amazing and, you know, you got picked in every team and all the rest of it, well, that's a pretty tough benchmark to follow. And I always remember a teacher that I worked with. I was working with a group of teenage athletes at a sports academy at a school. And it was a deputy principal, actually, and he came in and he said, you know, the moment I will never forget from my sporting history, and he had a fairly strong sporting background, he said there was a cricket final and it was the critical moment and the ball came in and it was a sitter and there's no way you'd miss that catch. And mm-hmm. I missed that catch. Yeah. And he said, and you could just watching the kids see this deputy principal who was so accomplished and all the rest of it talk about, I still live with the moment I dropped the ball in the under 14 cricket team or whatever it was. It humanised him, but it humanised disappointment as well. And I think, you know, the right blend of that for our children is reassuring as well, because they do hold us up. You know, they do think that we've never stood in their shoes, that, mm-hmm. you know, that we've got to wherever we are doing whatever we do and don't necessarily always understand how challenging it was for us. And you know, we can all remember vulnerable moments in sport, you know, the team you didn't get picked for or whatever it was. So, you know, in the right moment at the right time, you might share some of those moments with your teens.
It's really important that concept there that you mentioned about, because we're human, as you said, and we always told our kids, you know, don't ever hold us up on a pedestal ever, because, you know, we've all failed and there's nothing wrong with failing. That's the only way you're going to learn to do it better or avoid that mistake next time.
Absolutely.
And that builds resilience. And this is something that I see missing a lot in generations now around me in terms of as a high school principal, the I suppose lack of resilience, because perhaps, as you said, the world has been too frightening now. You can't let your kids just go and ride into town across the river for fear that someone would snatch them or they get bashed up or mm-hmm. something would happen, and that's the world we live in. So we take away those opportunities, but more the reason for them to play sports so they get access to those opportunities that will build their resilience, definitely. Your role as a sports psychologist is a huge one, and I know we're going to run out of time very soon, and I haven't even touched on half the questions that I want to talk talk about, and I'd love to invite you back to talk further about this, because I know our listeners will really enjoy hearing you, and they'll be able to reflect on what you've been saying. Tell us, for those listeners that would like to find your book and purchase your book, can you tell us where they can find it?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Tracy. I would love to do that. So a couple of places you can find it. So the book is actually currently housed in quite a few of the independent booksellers. So if you go to your local independent bookseller, you can see if it's either there or they'll be able to get it in for you. So that's, I always like to plug our indies first. And of course, there's all the other larger chains and so forth that you can get that through in the ebook. And the other one that you can get it from is if you can come and pay me a visit on my website or find me through Facebook or LinkedIn or Instagram, and there's links to it there. So you can get that through my website and look after you with the shipping and so forth on there. So thank you, Tracy, for that plug. So, and if you can remember my name, then you can find me or the name of the book, which is in the grandstands.
So you can find Jo on her website, and it's www.drjolukens.com. So Dr. as in D-R, Jo as in J-O, Lukens as in L-U-K-I-N-S.com. Well worth reading both of Dr. Jo's books. And we've only really touched on a very, very small segment of your book. And I'd love for you to come back, because I'd really like to hear what your thoughts are about going forward in this world now, how we can better protect the world of sport from what we've been seeing. Until your book arrived on the shelves, there's nothing that I've ever seen ever in my life that replicates this. So it's really important. It's really important stuff. And I know that, I'm sure that our people would love to know about the Goldilocks principle. And there's a heap of other how to have a background helpful conversation with your children. And you've actually put examples of how to speak to really, really powerful, very, very powerful examples there for people, because I can almost hear people saying, well, what do I say in this situation? So for our listeners, Dr. Jo's put in her book lots of real world conversations that I know I've reflected on them when I read your book, and I can hear, you know, the kids saying those sorts of things when they do get fatigued, when they grieve, and when they've, you know, had their heart set on something and it hurts so much. How do you move them forward from that? So they're very important parts. And of course, you've got, and I'm teasing everyone with some of these snippets here, the six words your child needs to hear you say. And I love to watch you play. And I know, I'm sure our kids, well, knew I had a very, very loud, distinct voice, but they loved hearing it. And they, because I'd say, oh, I'll try not to say too much this time. They say, no, Mum, we hear that you're supporting everyone and you're supporting us, and it's okay. And it used to blow me away with immense pride that I wasn't upsetting them, cheering. The aeroplane safety briefing. So you've got lots of tantalising pointers here and tips. This book is absolutely phenomenal, especially about the mind, mental strategies, etc. So I do invite you back if you have some time. I know you're really, really busy. And just before we do finish up, I wonder if you would share some of the events that you have been working on since the book came out, so that listeners can hear how they can utilize your book if they wanted to.
Oh, thank you, Tracy. So I find myself in lots of diverse places, actually. So, I've talked about my sporting background. So I do the consulting work for the North Queensland Cowboys, the rugby league team. I've been with them. This will probably date me, but I've been there with them since 1996. So that's been a very long and rewarding journey for me to work alongside that team. Very excitingly, just recently I worked with the Queensland Women's State of Origin team, who had their their first ever State of Origin game in Queensland. They haven't won. They drew in 2015 and they've lost every year since then. And we got the win the other week, so that was fantastic. And working with them in the bubble too, which was really interesting. And I'm currently working in the Women's National Basketball League supporting the Adelaide Lightning. But then I find myself in other places. So I do quite a lot of work with the Australian Defence Force because obviously they're interested in a lot of the principles of sports psychology apply with our fabulous defence personnel. And just this weekend I was out at Mount Isa working with some beginning teachers who will be starting their teaching careers from next year, and some of them in far-flung places like Mornington Island and all sorts of places throughout Queensland, so providing some support for them. So it's interesting that many of the principles that we know about what does it mean to have a fulfilling life, a fulfilling career, and to, you know, enjoy ourselves and to feel good within ourselves and to be resilient, you know, those messages are consistent across lots of different domains. So that's what I guess, yeah, the aim is to translate those lessons for whatever context people find themselves in.
And if you are in the field of, for our listeners, if you're in the field of education, and it doesn't matter what level of education, or if you are a parent on a PNC meeting, or if you are in even right down there in junior school, this is a book that won't go astray. And I know that Joe has packages, don't you? You offer packages to purchase these books. So if, you know, I would love to see PNC, Parents and Citizens over here in Australia, you know, have a look at and really seriously think about putting some of these books in their schools to help support the teachers and help support the parents and the students around some of these issues, because it's a really good read. It's an interesting read. It's a comfortable read, and it's full of juicy tips and tricks to help you. And it's timely. It's time, very much so. So, Dr. Joe Lukens, www.drjoelukens.com, and you can find Joe there, and you can look at both her books, The Elite and In the Grandstands, there, and you'll be able to thoroughly enjoy those. But do have a look on Amazon, and you'll be on Spotify with this podcast and down the track there too. So I can't extol the virtues of this book enough. It's been fabulous having you on, and I really hope that you can join us again another day and go into, drill right down into some of these areas, because there's so much in here. There's so much gold, so many nuggets, and, you know, In the Mirror, for example. I can flip through this book and you know, the importance of attitude. I just loved it, and I thoroughly enjoyed reading it on the plane today. So thank you very much, Joe, for coming today. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for this 60 minutes of really, really interesting topic that's out there, and it's pertinent to now and it's pertinent to the future. And I hope that you've enjoyed listening to Dr. Jo, and I know that you'll encourage her to come back. So bbsradio.com, if you're looking to maybe share this recording today with some of your friends, some of your school mums, your staff, some parents, etc., then pop on to tracytullytalks.com and you'll be able to find Joe's recording here. So that's www.bbsradio.com/TracyTullyTalks, and you'll be able to hear us today. Dr. Joe, thank you so very, very much. It's been wonderful having you here with us today, and I wish you all the very best with your book.
Thank you, Tracy, and thank you very much for your support. I would love to come back one day and would be very happy to talk again with your listeners. So thank you for all of your support.
Thanks. Cheers. Thanks for listening to another 60 minutes of inspiring talking points on Tracy Tully Talks, brought to you by bbsradio.com. Tune in every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, and 5 p.m. PT time in America. Leave me a message on my website at www.bbsradio.com/TracyTullyTalks.
If you're interested in lifting the profile, presence and profit of your business, sponsorship opportunities are available. Until next Thursday, it's goodbye from me.